Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about promoting peace. And of course, that's something we all want to do because peace is a mighty fine thing. And, you know, people used to ask me about whether Recipe for Peace Now was doing global peace. And I always said, yes, one person at a time, because it is too big an idea to think about, oh, the whole world and all the fighting and everything. Let's have peace now for all of that. What are we going to do about it? And the answer is that that's a step-by-step process. And we're not the governments, of course, because maybe governments can do something about it. But we're individuals, but we can still promote peace, can't we? Mm-hmm. So let's start with one of our general questions so that we can see where we'd like to take this show, because, of course, it is unscripted. Mm-hmm. And I think the general question is, how can we promote peace and encourage consensus building? Because really, when you have consensus, well, then you're working towards something and you've got peace. Hmm? Oh, all right. Some of you are saying that sometimes people have the consensus to wage war. I suppose that's true too, but we're going to consider it a peace building consensus and not one to get together and do something, well, bad for the world and bad for other people. Mm-hmm. Yes, we're going to try to make consensus to make the world a better place and to promote peace. Mm-hmm. So what should we do? What can we as people, as leaders, but not really as world leaders, what can we do to promote peace and positive consensus building? How's that? Positive consensus building, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I suppose that's true. Quite a few people are saying, well, we could try to become world leaders and have more power, more influence, more ability to truly influence world affairs. Yes, we could talk about that as our first one, I suppose. It's kind of something that's beyond the scope of what we do with our groups, but, well, all right. Become more important, become more of a world leader would be a good way to promote peace and consensus building on more of a national and international level. Mm-hmm. How else? How can we in our present state? Well, yeah, okay, let's talk about the way, of course, to become a world leader is to get a big following, I would say. And do it step by step, kind of start. Yeah, this is true. I live in a democracy. I live in the United States, and this is a global show, of course. The way you do it in democracy is kind of step by step by getting elected and then getting to a higher office and like that. And there is the potential. There is some ability to do that, even if you come from non-influential circumstances. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you kind of gain supporters, right? And you get on ballots, and you support referendums and like that and get well-known. Other countries, of course, do it differently. You might need to have more kind of influence with the powers that be, we'll call it that, huh? Yeah, and that's a way to do it. I won't say that we can't. And, of course, the more influential we become, the more our words and our ideas and our promotion of peace is heard, right? The more it gets to be considered by more people. And then they get to say, yes, I will come with you. I will back you. I will be behind you. What can I do to help? You see? Yeah, and so it's a perfectly valid thought that in order to promote peace and positive consensus building, we as people who are of good character, good heart, good intent, should try to accept public office, should try to become influential, right? Yeah. That's a good point, too. There's ways to become influential that are not political, not actual elected or assigned leaders, by becoming well-known like a celebrity. You can become influential, right? By writing books, by giving talks and lectures, by being a deep thinker who is influential maybe to government leaders, right? Giving them ideas and what should be done and being influential in that way. Yeah, there's lots of different ways to influence the world that are not necessarily elected officials, right? Mm-hmm. And even influence your local government, influence your local leaders, and then it'll go forward, right? Mm-hmm. How else do we promote peace and encourage consensus building besides becoming more influential and powerful, which is certainly a very good idea? Because if there was more people of good character and good intent in charge, the world would certainly be a much better place, right? Yeah. If we ran the world, it would be a lot better. And I truly believe this. I believe oftentimes that the wrong people actually go to power because they have access to funds and to influence, but they are not necessarily people of good character. And that's what really counts when you're leading, right? Yeah. So how else should we promote peace and encourage positive consensus building? A lot of focusing by good, being a good example. Yeah, that's a real good way. By holding ourselves to a high standard, by being a good example, by showing it can be done. Mm-hmm. I like this. I'm going to call it the ripple effect also, where if you are a good example or you show people that it can be done, then each of those participants goes off into the world and does it too. And they are a good example, and they show people that it can be done. And then those people go, wow, that can be done. Didn't think it could. And then, you see, it travels all around the world because you've got people that go, wow, I can do that. Yeah, let's go forward. Mm-hmm. And then it develops exponentially. Mm-hmm. I'm going to call our next topic today creating empathy, because people are talking about understanding, to actually gain an understanding of what all sides are doing and why, right? That's empathy. And remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Understanding, not necessarily agreement. I understand why. But hear me out. Let's talk about that, and let's see all the other sides, and let's head more towards consensus, right? Yeah. I understand where you're coming from, but let's think that through. Let's look at it from a modern perspective, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like this, too. A lot of folk are talking about doing something about it. Let's call it being proactive. Let's go out and do something and not just talk about it, right? I love that. I always try to actually create influence, actually create the ripple effect, not just talk about it in a theoretical manner, right? And that's what this show is about. Remember, we like theory as well as anyone else, but we really like to go out and do something. We really like to learn something. We really like to go forward, right? Yeah. So really do something in the world. Let's go out and do something in a proactive manner. Mm-hmm. Next topic is going to be being open to new ideas, right? Mm-hmm. And letting go of some old ones maybe, and helping other people to do so also, so that we can reach a new idea together, right? So that we can go forward to success. Mm-hmm. You know what? I think the last one's going to be by being that we can promote peace and encourage positive consensus by being enthusiastic and optimistic. That's very undervalued, and it's very important to be enthusiastic and optimistic, to really feel, yeah, we're getting somewhere. Let's do this, right? Being enthusiastic and optimistic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's start. Let's start by being good examples, right? We can't expect people to do something that we don't model, right? We can't. And a lot of folk are talking about the civility rules, and I'm proud. I am. I'm proud that that's the first thing you thought of is the civility rules when you thought of being a good example and promoting peace and positive consensus building. Because they're the only rules the recipe for peace has, but they're really important and they permeate everything. And for those of you who are new, thank you everyone for being here, for all your participation. For those of you who are new, the civility rules are very simple. They're more complicated. Sometimes they're very complicated, but they seem simple. At their core, the civility rules say we will not be rude to one another. We will not be rude to each other. We will not interrupt. We will not bully. We will not roll our eyes, make sighing notions, that kind of stuff. Yes. And we will not be on our devices while someone else is trying to tell us something. Right? Yeah. And passing around the note, which is the new note that passes around the classes, of course, texting to someone else in the room. And then everybody giggles, no, that's rude. If I have to confiscate your device, I will, right? I don't do it automatically because I do think it's annoying to people. And also, devices look kind of the same, which is kind of scary. But I did once have that. People are asking if I've ever had anybody pick up the wrong device and leave. I had that once because all the phones were black, you know what I mean? And it was some years ago when it wasn't quite as popular to have a case on your phone, which makes it a little bit more distinctive. I still don't have a case on mine, which is true, because it's bulky. Mm-hmm. And I do think it doesn't help its ability to work. Maybe that's just a suspicion of mine because I live in a very metropolitan area and it gets cranky no matter what. But, yeah, but I don't confiscate devices, which they can't really be called phones anymore, can they? Unless there's a reason and I make you turn them over, right? Right. And breaching the civility rules would be a reason, yeah. It really would be, and using it as a rudeness, as a distraction. No, we won't be doing that. Mm-mm. So we will not be rude to one another, and we will take turns speaking. Now, I know a lot of you over the years we've talked about this in various shows, archived on the website recipeforpeacenow.com. Yes, there is a lot of them. Thank you for noticing. We've been doing this for about a decade. We've been doing this for about 10 years. Isn't that something? Yeah. Times have changed, but we're still here. There we go. The civility rules also go to taking turns speaking and being respectful to everybody. I personally, if this is needed, and oftentimes it is, even if a group is fairly much in agreement, sometimes people kind of are more long-winded than others. I confess that I ask a lot of questions. I like to know things. I like to know why. I like to know, you know, I like to have things clarified. So we set a time limit for speaking. I favor, and I know a lot of you do it different ways, I favor something that shows the time in front of you so that you can see how you're doing time-wise and that you've gotten the exact same amount of time as your fellow participant. I personally use a kitchen timer. It ticks, tick, 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 and then it goes ding when the time is up, and everybody knows that I haven't in some way cheated them or they haven't been cheated, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So we, as leaders, are always a good example of the civility rules. You cannot expect your participants to be civil, to obey them, to treat each other with respect if you do not model that. You cannot lose your temper. You cannot yell at anyone. You cannot roll your eyes, sigh, take out your phone. No, you can't do any of the things that you don't want them to do because you, as leader, are a model of the civility rules. If you don't adhere to them, you cannot get anyone else to do it. You must also, when talking about the civility rules and enforcing them, that must be done immediately. I actually announce them, even if it's a pretty darn civil group. I like everybody to know that they're in effect. You need to enforce them immediately, consistently, as in every time, and fairly. Do not wait until somebody has gone uncivil to announce the civility rules. It's too late. I announce them right up front, and I remind people of them immediately if things start to get the slightest bit less than civil. Right? Right. Yes, and then you won't have the problem of what to do when things get out of hand. Because you've been proactive, yes. You've done it first. Mm-hmm. People are talking about enthusiasm, Eric and others, and that goes with it, a good example of being enthusiastic and being glad to be here, right? And being enthusiastic that we're going to succeed. Very important. Mm-hmm. Lindsay and others are talking about, under good examples, being willing to modify your original idea. Yeah, being willing to modify and not just say, well, this is the idea I came in with. This is how it's always been done in my expertise, in my circle. And this is how it's going to be done now because it's always been done this way. No, thank you. Let's all listen to everybody. Let's all think about the new ideas. Let's see if there's something that needs to be changed, modified, adopted. Let's think about all sides, right? Yeah. Willingness to modify your original idea. Mm-hmm. Roger and others are saying, of course, that when you do that, you've released your own preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. And that's something you need to watch for, whether or not you've got a preconceived notion. Might be from experience, but not with this exact group. And even if it is the same exact group, which sometimes happens in the corporate world, it's different issues. And you don't know how they're going to react and how things are going to go. Now you have a guesstimate, but not really. So you need to release your preconceived notions and see what's happening now, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Yes, thank you. People are saying that you should also model decorum, right? How you look, how you act, your actual body language. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, we've done an entire show about body language archived on the website. Yes. RecipeForPeaceNow.com. Mm-hmm. Which leads us to the ripple effect, right? And the ripple effect is Muhammad says we teach to teach. Yeah. We teach to teach. All of our participants carry the lessons forward. We teach to teach. All of our participants carry the lessons forward. I like it, Muhammad. It means that, of course, as we lead, as we reach our successful outcome, as we model the civility rules, as we are good examples of, in all manner, we are teaching our participants how to do it, how to act, how to lead. And they will absorb this teaching. We teach to teach. All of our participants carry the lessons forward. And our participants, when they are done, even during, will go out into the world and use these methods, these lessons, to better their lives, to better the lives of their loved ones, right? Yes, they'll have learned something, and they will take it with them and teach others. And that's the ripple effect. The idea that I've got 10 people in my group, and they have learned how to promote peace and positive consensus building because they have watched, they have experienced, they have learned it. Next time they have a situation, they will use those lessons, and other people who are not in the room when they learned these lessons will learn them too and go, wow, that's really effective, that's really good. And then they, in turn, you see the idea, right? It makes one person influences maybe 1,000 people, maybe more, because it all came from learning and from teaching and from showing someone else how it's done, right? And that it can be done, which is kind of a surprise sometimes, that something can be done, that a consensus, positive consensus can be reached. Yeah, what an idea. You know, this is may be true. Emma says that it becomes a habit. You kind of get the lesson ingrained because you see it, and you don't do it real consciously, but it becomes a habit to be a peace builder, right? I certainly hope so. Yes. You know, this is an interesting point that Eden is making. He says it because that when you have the ripple effect and that people learn how to react and how to build consensus and how to promote peace, that people down the line, and even the first ones, that this kind of thinking becomes a habit. Yeah. And becomes a, as Eden says, it becomes a positive preconceived notion of negotiation standards. A positive preconceived notion of negotiation standards. This is how it should be. This is how it should be done. Yeah, let's go forward with this, right? Yes. A positive preconceived notion. I know how to handle this. And it's not a preconceived notion about specifics. It's about how to reach the positive outcome. So it's fabulous. It's a positive preconceived notion. I know how to handle this because I've done it before in a consensus-building manner, right? Yeah, a positive preconceived notion. I love it. Because oftentimes we think of preconceived notions as negatives, but not always. Our next topic about how we can promote peace and encourage consensus building is by creating empathy, right? Empathy. Empathy, my friends, is not agreement. Empathy is understanding. I understand why you think that. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understand it. Excuse me, took a sip of water. And in order to gain empathy, yes, thank you. Thank you all for being here and for listening. Yes, a lot of you have come, a lot of you come again. And in order to gain empathy, we break out the 5W questions, don't we? Yes, who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, why? The 5W questions. Yes. And the 5W questions are really how you find out, how you get to know something, how you know why, who sent you, what does that mean, where did you hear it, when did you learn it, why do you think that? Yes, this gets down to the bottom of it, and we ask it of ourselves too. And, you know, people always ask, in fact, people are asking now, if you break them all out like in that order. And the answer is no. You don't even need all five of them. What you're trying to do is getting to the bottom of some sort of an opinion or behavior. And you want to know how come, right? Yeah. You want to know why. You want to know what. You want to know what you're dealing with here. And why somebody has that opinion, right? Is it even their opinion, right? Sometimes I find out it's not. If it's even their opinion or it got sent to them, got kind of ingrained by a third party, a respected leader of their religion, of their culture, of their family, right? And sometimes people start out with the words everybody knows, right? Do you ever hear people say that everybody knows that? Ah, gee, I don't think so. I don't think everybody knows that. I don't know it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Remember that empathy is not necessarily agreement. You might agree, but you don't have to. Pardon me. Not necessarily agreement, but it leads to understanding. Yeah, it's understanding, not agreement. Now, how should we actually do this? We have some good examples. And, you know, the workbook, of course, is full of good examples for gaining understanding and empathy. Yeah, I know a lot of you own it, which is good. And a lot of you have been to the seminars and workshops where we give one to every participant. Yeah, so it's all good. And a lot of times those exercises and other ones that you can think of kind of encourage, as Fasai says, role play exercise to argue the other side. Oh, role play exercise, where you have to argue the other side, the opposition, the thing that we don't agree with. I want you to argue it sincerely. Let's role play. You be the other side and tell us why. Tell us why you think that this is right, why this is the only way. And we'll talk about it, right? Yeah, role-playing is very, very good because it gets you to consensus building. And sometimes the role is not that far away, not as far away as you thought. There's just some cultural overlay that makes it seem really foreign, but it's not. Chanel and others are talking about giving an assignment to research both sides and bring the results back to everyone. Yeah, why not? Let's look at all sides. Let's look at all sides with an unbiased eye, without a preconceived notion, right? Look at all sides, even the ones that oppose you, to see why, to see what the argument, maybe it's a valid argument. Maybe it could be fixed. Maybe for some reason there is a problem that's not really a problem, a disagreement. That's not really a disagreement. We're pretty close. We can fix this. We can modify towards the middle. Nothing on earth wrong with that. That's how you reach consensus. Let's go on to the next one. Oh, we are going to run out of time. The next one is being proactive, actually doing something about it, whatever it is. Hussein and others are saying, be the one who gathers all sides into discussion. Nice work, Hussein. Be the one who gathers all sides into discussion. Somebody has to do it. And at the beginning of the show, we talked about people with some influence and some power and some abilities. And we need to gather everybody. We need to gather the ones who think they're too important together. We need to gather the grassroots people. We need to gather representatives from the people who are going to be impacted. I might not even realize it, right? Yeah, they may not even realize that they're going to be impacted until you point it out. And they're like, oh, my God, really? Yes, really. Yes, Hussein says you need to be the one who gathers all sides into the discussion. Truth? That's a good point, too. Brian and others are saying that in order to be proactive, you need to insist that religious groups follow their mandate and get involved. Brian says you need to insist that religious groups, organized religion mainly, but also different kinds of groups, right, follow their mandate and get involved, right? There's no glory in it usually, but you resolve something. You get something straightened out, right? And quite frankly, if you are doing it on a business level or even not, it enhances your reputation, right? And that's in its way priceless, because then people know that you're the go-to person. You're the person who really knows how to handle this. Isn't that fabulous? Yes. So you want to be able to get people involved to create a solution. Yes. Francois and others are talking about using the media to promote consensus, to promote awareness, right? The media is fabulous nowadays because you don't have to have to reach a big radio station. You can reach bloggers. You can reach all kinds of areas in addition to the traditional. And if you reach out enough, and it's an important enough topic, you'll be able to reach higher, right? Yeah. So, go to the media. I'm gonna do this like four of them, because it is good. In fact, it's excellent. You know how you act from a place of positivity? Yeah. You come in with a positive or negative attitude, and you act, you go forward from that spot that you're in, either positive or negative. Not so much a physical spot, but a way of being, an opinion spot, right? We are going to succeed, or we are going to fail. Yeah, we're going to go for succeed, right? And people are giving me, it says, a lot of people say, act from a place of, right? How about tolerance? Yeah. Make it a concerted effort for the leader and for the participants to work from a place of tolerance. And not from a place of bigotry or hate. From a place of tolerance. People are talking about a place of love. We all are accepted, right? Yeah. From a place of really deep thought. Really thought this through. And this is what we're going to do. Yes. And that's kind of the key to it. For being proactive, but also for when you're inside. When you're already doing it. To come from a place of tolerance. People are calling it a place of love. Same thing, I think, don't you? At a place of peace. And not only to come from these basic foundations, but to show others how, right? Because sometimes people are unsure how to do such a thing. But we're sure. Let's teach it. Let's show others how. So that's being proactive. I like to go into the community sometimes, different communities, and show people how to do it on their own. And I don't need to be sitting there each time. You can come and ask me questions. You can Skype me or call me or text me. But you can do it. Do it. Act from a place of tolerance, right? And the civility rules and the empathy of the 5W questions. Yes. I mean, I'll come by occasionally if you get stuck, but you do it. And you'll be surprised. People really can. It's just they don't think they can because nobody told them they could. Yes. And they're fabulous, besides. They really get somewhere. How can you beat that? Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Let's also be open to new ideas, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Suki has a good point. She says be aware of our own preconceived notions. We need to be open to new ideas, and one of the new ideas is we're not perfect, right? Yeah. And let's be wary of our own preconceived notions, even if we think they're kind of positive and we're not being nasty, right? No, let's really examine this. Let's really think about it. Let's really talk it through. Mm-hmm. Yes. Let's be aware of our own preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point, too, Thomas and others are making, that when you're open to new ideas, then everyone is respected and heard. Everyone is respected and heard. Now, this is sometimes no mean trick, because you want to be sure, even though somebody is very adamant, leader's job to make civility, and we want to be able to hear them. Mm-hmm. Everyone is respected and heard. Mm-hmm. Quentin is talking about teams, which we talk about quite a bit, that you make teams to research all the sides, right? Sometimes that does involve role playing also. Let's research all of it. Let's find out what it is we need to know. Yeah? Let's find out why. Who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we need to be able to work our teams, and we need to have everyone respected and heard, and we need to be aware of our own preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. Our next one was being enthusiastic and optimistic. That is underrated. Leaders really do need. Shafuti and others are saying the leader is a role model. Yes. If you don't, as leader, evidence an optimistic and enthusiastic attitude, we're going to make this work. It's going to take some time, but we're going to do it. If you don't model that, the group's going to fall apart because they will feel hopeless. And nobody wants to be in a hopeless situation, right? If you can show people and model and be enthusiastic and optimistic, even if things don't always go exactly like you had in mind, because sometimes they don't. You know how that is. Things sometimes, they just don't seem to wanna. If you keep your enthusiasm and your optimism, even if we have a setback, it's just one link in the chain, one step. Let's step forward again, right? Let's keep the team, the group together so that we can go forward to a successful outcome. And people don't wander off because they think it's hopeless. And that's what happens. If people really feel it's hopeless, they're going to wander off. They're not going to want to participate. And that's a really bad thing, of course, right? Because you won't have anyone to lead. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, Chris and many others, we have talked about this in the past also on prior shows, archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Mm-hmm. That every time you have a success, a smallish success, a step forward, right? Celebrate so that we can remember it, so that we can remember if it doesn't seem like we're getting anywhere, but then we can remember how far away we were to begin with. And you go, oh, yeah, we've come quite a long way, actually. Right? Yes, remember how far away you were so that you can be encouraged. Right? People are talking about a timeline to show how low it was and then it gets higher. If that's a good purpose for it, go for it. I think that timelines are a little tricky, and I don't, because if you stagnate for a while, it kind of shows. It'll go back a step. I like timelines mainly for things that have a definite drop-dead date, a definite due date, right? Got to get on the ballot by a certain date. Have to turn in our signatures to get on the ballot by a certain date, right? That's different. But celebrate. Celebrate every success. And yes, if you want to make a timeline or a stars or a half-full glass that's getting fuller or whatever it is that you do to visually represent how far we've come and also to have a convivial time together, to have the ability to really get to know each other and to work together on a solution. Mm-hmm. And to think of it as a privilege. Can I say that? That goes with the enthusiasm and optimism. Yeah, it's a privilege to work on that. Mm-hmm. So celebrate constantly, because we're going to have small successes constantly, and a lot of people only look at the big picture. But there's a lot of steps to get to the big picture. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, this is a good point, too. Patricia says that you need transparency in the process because it may take time. You need transparency in the process because it may take time. Yes, you do. I personally, and I do think it's a good idea because it's been proven to be a good idea to me at least. I personally, if pushed as part of my transparency of what's going to happen, if pushed to give an estimate of how long it's going to take, I figure really big. I do, because then people aren't discouraged if we go past the estimated delivery date, so to speak, if we go past the time and it's taking more time and effort than I indicated. So I actually figure big, right? If we come in under that, good for us. Mm-hmm. How else will we make people feel enthusiastic and opinionated and want to go forward? Mm-hmm. How about making a convivial atmosphere so that they want to work together, right? A convivial atmosphere. Everything from being comfortable, being easy to find location-wise, to being respected, to taking a turn when only we needed a turn, right? Maybe give our time to someone else. Mm-hmm. Convivial atmosphere so that you want to work together. Because if people really, 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 really don't want to be there, it's not going to make for a really good session. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So, this kind of segues into the convivial atmosphere so that you want to work together. Kind of heads towards the food, doesn't it? And we've got a few minutes left because I deliberately left a little time for the recipes. I know you guys like them, and a lot of times we run out of time. So, we're going to use food as a tool with Recipe for Peace now. Food as a tool. Now, you might be hungry. It might be dinner time. But it's really a tool to get us talking about something that we aren't going to fight about. Asking questions. How did you make that? Wow, that's fabulous. What's it called? It looks delicious. Right? It gives us a cool-down moment. And it gives the leader a minute to talk in private with someone who has breached our civility rules, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Because you can't have bullies and like that carried forever. You need to be able to resolve it. Mm-hmm. So, first thing we're going to do is we're going to take a survey. We're going to find out if there's anybody in the group who can't eat a certain type of food, either allergy, just won't, or religious prohibition. And we won't bring that kind of food, right? Because we disseminate the information. Also, when people come with something, we'd like them to have a list. Not what it's called, a written list. Not what it's called, but what is in it, so that I can run my eye down it and see if it's something that I can eat. Yes. Mm-hmm. So we want to have the survey that we disseminate the information and a list so I can determine it. Now, generally speaking, yes, it's a good way to call a timeout too. It's a good way to enforce the civility rules. If you see that people are getting a little bit less than civil, right? We're going to enforce the civility rules, and we're going to take a timeout to kind of remind somebody of the civility rules, right? To see if some peer pressure can be applied, maybe, about not acting like that. Uh-huh. And it also breaks the train of thought of whoever it is that's about to violate the rules. We're not going to do it. We're not going to have it. So we're going to take a timeout for a little bit of food. I think the leader should bring a safe recipe. It's something that everyone can eat. We've taken the survey. And my people would be familiar with in ingredients. And it's not got a whole ton of ingredients. It's not as complicated as some. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to do the safe recipe now. It is a potato soup. Delicious. I hesitate to say this, because I don't like to encourage people to use leftovers, because sometimes they go bad and you don't realize it, and you shouldn't. You should look at them real carefully when you take them out of the fridge or wherever they've been. But you know how you have kind of big events, or even not so big, but you do a lot of mediation and negotiation work, and you always have food. Sometimes you've got some leftover mashed potatoes and leftover vegetables and stuff. This is a perfect recipe for it. I confess, I make this recipe when I have potatoes that have already been cooked and can be squished into, can be made smooth for the soup, right? Like mashed potatoes, or at least potatoes of some sort that you can mash. There we go. Mm-hmm. So you need about a couple of pounds of potatoes. You want to use fresh ones, which would probably be even better than mine, of course. Do so. Bake the potatoes, because we're going to mash them. But sometimes, oh, never mind. Yes, I will actually cut up like broccoli and carrots and stuff, too, to put in this if we've got it left over. So about a pound and a half, we'll make it 2 pounds of potatoes. A quarter of a cup of butter, quarter of a cup of all-purpose flour, 4 cups of chicken broth, because it's going to make the potato soup base. A cup and a half of whipping cream. Please do not use something that's not whipping cream, something less thick. It won't make as well. Mm-hmm. And about a third of a cup of sour cream, because we're going to whip it in at the very last minute. In fact, I actually like to keep the sour cream out, not to let it spoil, but so that it's more room temperature. Mm-hmm. We've got our potatoes made one way or another. They're baked potatoes, they're mashed potatoes, whatever. Mm-hmm. No, you cannot use, come to think of it. People are asking about mashed potatoes that are rehydrated potatoes, but they do have mashed potato consistency when they get all done. I don't know. You'd have to research it. I don't know if they're processed in some way that would make them incapable of being put into soup. Mm-hmm. Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to take a nice pan, and we're going to melt our butter, and we're going to stir in the flour until it's smooth, right? Whisk, 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 whisk. Mm-hmm. Add the mashed potatoes, which is what I'm going to call them. Mm-hmm. The chicken broth, and get the whole thing up and boiling, and stir it until it's thickened and bubbly, right? I give it a good stir, and I keep it on the fire, maybe even a little longer than some people. I like it to be nice and thickish. It's got the mashed potatoes and the chicken stock, the chicken broth, right? And you've got the flour and the butter, right? We did a big saucepan, right? We did made the roux, the flour and the butter. Then we added the mashed potatoes, the chicken broth. Stir, 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 stir. Nice and thick and cooked and bubbly and like that. Mm-hmm. We're now going to stir in the whipping cream, kind of slowly, whisk it. The sour cream. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're going to stir it all around. Fabulous. We have chicken, we have potato soup. Delicious, nice and thick. Mm-hmm. You don't need to boil it again when it's sitting on the pot all made because it's going to catch. But you do need to stir it around. Mm-hmm. So we've added we're now going to add, do we stir in the whipping cream and the sour cream? Yeah. You can add some chives to it too if you like. I find that giving something kind of in its base form as the potluck, and then putting condiments to the side, like chives and, I don't know, salt and pepper and whatever it is you like, is very effective, and then people don't not eat it because it's got little green flecks in it, right? Right, yeah, I leave all that stuff to the side because people are asking about it. If I have vegetables, cooked vegetables, that can be added in, right? They get stirred in at the last so that it's nice and hot, but it's already a thick soup. Mm-hmm. If you think I've made it too thick with the whipping cream and the sour cream and like that, although it is delicious, you can add a little bit of chicken broth. Do not add water, because what's the point of adding water? Just add more chicken broth. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be able to do our adventure recipe too, hallelujah, because sometimes we don't do any of the recipes. It's crab cakes, which is, of course, an adventure, because a lot of people are allergic to crab cakes. Yeah, allergic to crab. Mm-hmm. I like quite a bit of crab in mine. I like to make them small, like mini crab cakes, because then people can take more than one, but they don't waste. Right? Right. Let's have 2 pounds of crab meat. I'm going to say the kind that's already cracked and washed and pieces, little pieces of shell have been taken out and like that. If you can't get that, of course, you need to do it. You need to cook the crab and get all the meat out of it. Mm-hmm. And cool it. Don't use hot. Let's have a cup of breadcrumbs. I'm going to divide it into half a cup and half a cup. 3 beaten eggs. Nice big minced onion, a sweet one. A minced green bell pepper. Also, you know, to seed and to vein and like that and mince it up. And a minced red bell pepper. Just put a little mustard in it. I kind of like mustard in here. I like the kind that's kind of darker in color. It's called Dijon. Mm-hmm. Let's have a teaspoon of mustard. A half teaspoon of pepper sauce of some sort. I use Tabasco sauce. It's easy enough to come by in my area. But some sort of a spicy sauce to give it some kick. Mm-hmm. Tabasco's fairly spicy. That's it. We're going to use some vegetable oil on the pan. So we're going to take our crab meat, and we're going to combine it with the half cup of the breadcrumbs, the eggs, the onion, the peppers, which we've chopped up real nice, the mustard, which we don't want to put too much in because it'll make it soggy, and the Tabasco sauce, if we've got it separate, right? Right. I don't think we do. Mm-hmm. And a half teaspoon. That ought to do it. It gives it a little bit of oomph. Now, take this whole thing, mix, right? You've only used half your breadcrumbs, right? Yeah. We're going to make it into little balls, which we're going to squish into little patties. Makes little crab cakes, right? Right. You know those breadcrumbs? The remaining ones, let's put them out on a piece of wax paper or in a dish, depending on how you feel about it, And let's take the patty, both sides, coat all around the edges. Everything's coated with the nice breadcrumbs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We've got our vegetable oil. Make it hot in a nice big skillet. The crab cakes get cooked about 3 minutes on each side until they're nice and brown, right? You do it in batches. You take them out, you put them on a paper towel so that it's not greasy, or on one of those greasy racks. Yes, thank you, I just don't own one. And you keep making them until you're all done. And they are fabulous. I like them to be smallish. And then on the side, because I haven't made a very spicy thing again, just like I didn't make very spicy potato soup, on the side, put all kinds of condiments, all kinds of mayonnaise and stuff that people like, right? Yeah. And then people can choose. They're nice and moist in the middle, too, which is kind of nice and not too spicy because, quite frankly, there's the Tabasco sauce on the side next to it. You would like some? Go for it. Yeah, I've seen people actually dip in Tabasco sauce. That's more spicy than I like, but not necessarily a bad thing. My friends, we made it to two recipes, and I'm proud, because sometimes we make it to none. We are out of time. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for all of your listening. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.